sexaholics. I'm glad to be a sexaholic. I'm like, what do you mean? Like, don't you want to be out of here? Don't you want to be free of this thing? And they were free of it, but they were not in denial about it. And so over time, thank you. I have come to accept that it is only in accepting, acceptance is the answer to all my problems today, accepting my sexaholism, that I actually am freed from its power. It's like the total opposite of what I would expect coming into these rooms. I want to deal with the effects without addressing the heart issue. But the only way I can get to the heart issue is by accepting the illness as it is, and that I will always be a sexaholic. That's not a bad thing. That's something to be embraced and owned, and to take responsibility and working the steps, being of service. That's what enables it for me. So I'm grateful for that. I also didn't get there overnight, and I had a lot of help and have a lot of help. People voluntelling me or helping me to see what I cannot see on my own. God doing for me what I could not do for myself. So thanks. I'm Steven. I'm a grateful sexaholic. Thanks for letting me share.
Sam, sexaholic, thank you for sharing your experience, strength, and hope, Stephen. Embracing my sexaholism, I think what that means to me now is, you know, there is no once and forever. You know, there is no like, you know what, I'm going to embrace my sexaholism today, which means I'm just going to embrace it tomorrow and the next day and the next day. Yeah, like just, it's like a light switch I just get to turn on and it stays on. You know, and I've come to realize, at least from my experience and strength and hope, that's not the case. Tomorrow, I have to make the conscious effort to just accept I'm a sexaholic and everything that entails it. Even as like a middle school band teacher, where unfortunately we end up on the news a lot of band teachers. You know, for my case, embracing my sexaholism, I think it doesn't have to enable the actual acting out behavior. It gets to enable me to reach out to God for help, which I have to do every single day. Because if I'm not a sexaholic, why do I need to reach out to God for, you know? And turn my will. It enables me to do a better step three, I believe. Well, where I turn my will, my life over to the care of God, which I get to do. You know, if I wasn't in this program, or if I wasn't a sexaholic, or was in denial about being a sexaholic, why reach out to God? You know. So, especially since my relapses have just been very, just really awful experiences for me. Embracing my sexaholism also enables me to pray for the people that I might be lusting after. Whether it be like at church, at the workplace, or wherever I go, I get to just do a really quick prayer. And if I have to do that multiple times, I'll do that multiple times. I get to reach out to God at. When I embrace my sexaholism, I get to reach out to God more, and can't wait to hear your guys' shares. Thank you.
Thank you, Sam. I also forgot to read a few important guidelines for sharing, so I'm going to read those now. And Sam followed those guidelines, just so you know, so I'm not sharing these because I'm embracing my sexaholism right now, folks. As many as possible can share. Please keep your shares to the time limit of 3 minutes. Thank you to our timer. We ask that sharing be pertinent to the topic. We don't take the inventories of others. That is, we uncover and work on our own defects, not those of others. We avoid politics, religious dogma, and other divisive issues. We avoid explicit sexual descriptions and sexually disrespectful or abusive language. If someone feels a share is too explicit, they may signify by raising their hand. We do lead with our weakness and take the risk of total self-disclosure. So, now you may come up to the mic. The floor is open for sharing. And again, adult fist, I held it too close to my mouth again. Thank you. The reading was from the big book, pages 30 to 31.
Thank you.
More About Alcoholism, and page 152.
Dorothy, sexaholic.
Dorothy.
So, when I first got into SA, I was like, totally, the whole 12 step, complete doubt. Because years ago, when, I think it was Al-Anon, one of my previous husbands was like, oh, you need to go to Al-Anon. And I thought that was the stupidest thing, especially when they were wanting me to like kind of model-coddle my husband. I was like, nah, this 12 step might work for other people, but nah. So, but when I couldn't hear my higher power and I was in a not a good place in so many different ways, I was like, I'm going to try my higher power. Okay, you show me that this 12-step matters. And of course, one of the first meetings was about the big book. And I'm like, well, I'm not an alcoholic. Maybe way back, but I was able to drop that real quick. Because I saw the damage of that could lead. But I was like, I stuck around. And sometimes I had to do 4 or 5 meetings so I could be out of my head. And, but embracing the fact that, oh, I can't like whip through this 12-step thing and be like, okay, I'm done. Now, where's my certificate? I got this covered. I can go back to my crazy world. I learned real quick. I think it was like in the first couple weeks that, crap, this is going to be a lifetime? On my last breath, I'll probably be doing the Serenity Prayer. And so, yeah, I realized that this is a part of me. No different than my members, my hands, my feet, my legs. The actual illness is a part of me, regardless whether I like it or not. And so, disacknowledging, that's like disacknowledging I don't have a limb. And I'm like hopping all around with one missing leg, but I still have my two legs. So, yeah, I'm grateful that I do have the sexaholic because I'm now able to touch base with God in a way that I was never able to do before. Thank you.
Thank you, Dorothy.
Thank you.
Paula, sexaholic.
Hi, Paula.
Should I lower this?
Yeah.
I joined the program April of this year, and I can tell you right now that I have not embraced it. I had technical sobriety, and I only acquired a sponsor a month ago. I returned to work this fall after not working since 2009. And I remember during my interview twice having the mental thought, how can I do this line of work if I'm a sexaholic? How can I be here every day if I'm a sexaholic? And do I deserve this job? And then as the months progressed, I noticed there was another individual not associated with my work, but would come to my work. And I had met him at one of the first SAA meetings that I went to. And he is held at such high esteem at my place of work. And I remember thinking in conversations with my boss, when she would talk about this individual, yeah, he's a great man. And in my mind, but he's a sex addict. You know, he's a sex addict. And so then I realized, you know, after a few days of that, well, that was me. And like, I'm defining this man, and that was me defining myself, that I didn't deserve this job because of this dark secret that I have. And so I feel like I've finally overcome that with that tiny baby step. But now, as far as embracing my sexaholism, I feel like, how can I embrace something that's such an integral part of my life and no one knows about it? How can I visit my family and my own mother isn't aware of who I really am? Or my adult children. And so for me, it's very difficult still to be in this program and to just have this idea that this is who I am. I can't change it. I have to accept it. But I can never share it. And it's a part of me till I die. And I have to wrap my arms around it and embrace it. So that's where I'm at today. Paula Sexaholic, thank you for listening.
Thank you, Paula.
I'm Michael Sexaholic. Stayed into the mic. I'm Michael Sexaholic. Yeah, from the reading, I was just reading it over. Talks about imagination. Like, come to meetings and your imagination will be, you know, struck, or, you know, it's yeah, fired. There you go. Thanks, John. Fired. Fired up. And that just makes me think about, I have a pastor who, he's also a sexaholic. And he would tell me, what was it? Sanctified imagination. Use your sanctified imagination. 'Cause I've used my imagination, to get into the gutter of sexaholism. And in meetings, you know, meeting people, hearing their stories, and I'm a visual person, so I, you know, and I learn by stories, and that's what I just love about the program, is hearing people's stories and realizing, or just connecting with them through their stories. That's really how I get fired up and how I keep coming back to meetings, is because I hear people's stories. And I was sharing about this yesterday. As a sexaholic, first thought is outward appearance, which has nothing to do with inward appearance and people's experiences. And it's just very, and I don't like that about my sexaholism, but that's how I see when I walk into rooms and, you know, in public and stuff. I just see the outward appearance. And I think that that's what matters, but it doesn't. Essays taught me that, and I'm still learning that. And if I go back out, I have to relearn, because when I go back into lust, then my brain switches to outward appearance is the only thing that matters. And then I have to come back to sanity. And then another thing, for me, I hated going to meetings at first. Thanks. I hated going to meetings and didn't, I don't know what it was. Probably just shame. I think it's just shame. I knew I had to go. I didn't like it. Instead of seeing the similarities, I saw the differences and I just wanted to run. It wasn't until I did a 90 meetings in 90 days, that's when my brain kind of switched. There was just one day I was hearing people's stories at a meeting, and then there was a thought that I think was my higher power, because I couldn't think that way before, I realized that, oh, I get to go to meetings and I get to hear these people's stories. Thanks, I hear that. And I'll wrap up. And from that moment, I just keep coming to meetings, even if I'm not sober, because I get to hear from people who I normally would not be able to hear people's stories, you know, from different places around the world, backgrounds, whatever. So I'm grateful for that. Thanks.
Thanks, Michael.
John, sexaholic.
John.
And I like what it says in here, because I'm thorough. Like, the two readings, really, I like both parts of it. But I am thoroughly convinced that I am a sexaholic, through and through. Dyed in the wolf. There's no doubt about it in my mind. And so, and I didn't, you know what, when I first came to SA back in 1995, I thought, oh, you know, I have church, and I could use SA as a kind of like a supplemental vitamin. You know, that was in my mind. I really thought that was my crazy thinking. I thought, well, this will kind of help along with church. And, you know, I have the best, you know, I have two good things that'll work for me. And I thought one meeting a week is all I need, and that'll be good. And then I was told by a sponsor, no, you need more meetings. And I said, really? But, you know, I think I was on the what they call like an AA, the pink cloud I was on for a little bit when I got in there. And then I just realized, well, you know, because, of course, the compulsion strikes. And then I went out and I'm going, what happened? You know, I thought it was supposed to be easy now, and it wasn't. Because I had to work the steps and work with others and, you know, call people and other things. And I said, oh, this is a little bit of work. But it's not drudgery or anything. I don't think of it as drudgery. I mean, I love calling all my SA friends. I say friends because I'm closer to the people within SA than I am at church. They're nice people at church, great people, but I can't share with them on this kind of level or this level of honesty. I think there's maybe one guy, because I did invite him to a panel we had one time back in March, so he can learn a little bit more about us. And I like the other line in here. It says, the most satisfactory years of your existence will lie ahead. And I said, yeah, I'm 62. I turned 62 last year. I'll be 63 next month. But I'm like, okay. And I love some of the stuff I get to do in SA. Just like I'm for my area, I'm part of the supporting institutions and hospitals. Professionals. Thank you. It used to be H&I. It used to be a hospitals institution. I don't know why they changed it to that, but someone did. But I love doing that kind of work now, reaching out to other people, finding, you know, every day I get on my knees and I say, God, please put another sexaholic or someone in my life that I could help today. And I usually will get that call from someone, or I'm just reaching out randomly, or I'm sponsoring a guy. Some of you may have heard me. I am sponsoring a guy from Sudan who's living in Saudi Arabia right now. He just called me this morning. He said, oh, yesterday, he said, I just acted out with someone, and I feel so bad. And I said, okay, let's just get back up. We'll start working the steps, pick up where you left off on, and we'll talk more. But it's these little things that I get to do in life for recovery that just, I feel so good. And that's why I love this program. I've been here since 1995. So if you had told me if someone had told me in 1995, you're going to be here in 2025, I would have said, you're crazy. I'll just be here for a year or two and I'll be gone. I'll just get what I need and leave, then I'm good. But that didn't work. My ways are not God's ways. They don't work out that way. But he had a better plan for me. Than my own thinking. So, yeah. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, John.
Hi, I'm Jack, a sexaholic, happily recovering sexaholic, slowly recovering. So, you know, I actually only go to meetings once a week. I find that helpful for me. I've been sober now for 8.5 years, thank God. And one of the reasons I go is because I have to remind myself that I'm a sexaholic. You know, because if I'm not involved and I don't have that weekly reminder, then it's easier for me to fall back into my lustful behavior. So I got to remind myself of what the problem that I have, and going to meetings every week and interfacing with other group people in my, like yourselves, people at my meeting. That's very, very helpful to me. Also, my prayer life is very helpful to me. I pray about my sobriety every morning when I get up and every night before I go to bed. As a reminder that even if nothing happened that day, I still have that problem. And that's what's important. Doing the readings remind me of who I am and the problem that I have. So I have all these different cues that help me remember that I have this problem. Never take it for granted, because once I take that for granted, oh, I don't have that problem anymore. Well, that's total BS. I have that problem. I've had a problem for many, many years. I gained my sobriety. I stopped with my sobriety, but like 60 years I suffered with it. It was an amazing grace for me. I didn't know I could ever do that. And I figured, you know, people say, well, how long are you going to be going to it? And I say, as long as it takes. And my experience shows me, how long does it take? It takes every day until the Lord calls me home. Then I know I'm there, and I don't have to worry about it anymore. No more meetings after I'm gone.
Thanks, Jack.
Nathaniel, sexaholic.
Nathaniel.
I've kind of a different experience. I came to the program already knowing. My higher power told me years and years ago, as I was watching a video and checking off all of the various symptoms that I had, he said, yeah, you're a sexaholic, by the way. And so as I made it down to the end of the list and was like, well, dang it. I didn't do anything about it. I was like, well, that sucks. And just kind of put that away and kept acting out and kept on and on and on and on down the list for a couple of years, honestly. And then I was finally feeling hopeless enough and worthless enough to actually do something about it. And started going to a different group. It's a church group. It's an accountability group. So they don't really have you do anything. They're just there for you when you walk in off the street to be like, hey, today sucks and I acted out. You know, but that's really all they do. And that's where I met my sponsor, Michael B., other Michael B. And he was like, hey, do you want to do something that works? And how far are you willing to go for it? And I said, I'm willing to go anywhere and do anything. And that's not true. But I made it here. I kind of forgot what I was talking about, honestly, and all that. And also what this whole meeting was. I think I've forgotten what this whole meeting was about, but that's probably okay. I was just remembering that, actually. So, I'm learning slowly to choose to remember that I am a sexaholic and do with that what I'm supposed to, instead of pushing that away or ignoring it or just folding up that paper with my results and putting it back in my pocket. Like, yeah, that sucks, but I like where I'm at, because I don't like where I'm at. Mm-hmm. So I know that I have to. It's not an option. If I choose to say tomorrow, no, I don't think I'm a sexaholic, and then just go back out there, I'll be worse off than I am now, because now I've taken steps toward that freedom that we've been talking about all weekend. And yeah, that's about it. Thank you.
Thanks.
Good morning.
Morning. Morning,
Bobby. Bobby, sexaholic.
Very
appropriate. Thanks, Stephen, for leading. Yeah, I started my addiction career with AA back in 2009. Of course, I could have said I was a sexaholic back then, but I didn't know I was even a sexaholic. I didn't get into this program until some 5 years later, when I realized with the therapy over the years, my wife and I had, it was always about my drinking. And my fear was, oh God, if she ever knew how awful I've been with masturbating and other women, it would ruin my marriage. And that was the fear I always had. But some 5 years later, when I finally found the program, she found some amends I was writing in AA that divulged everything I'd done in my sex career, and the gig was over. Worst day of my life, but as some would say, the best also. Because I started having to work this program back in 2014, which also enabled her to move to the West Coast with my youngest daughter. We were separated for 5 years, and I jumped into this program feet first, and did service, did, Gratitude Day on the East Coast. I did everything I could in this program to get me to a point where I would admit I was a sexaholic, because I had a very tough time with it. But fast forward to today, my wife is here with me at this conference, and that's a miracle of the program. That's progress, not perfection. But I was telling Stephen earlier this morning, we went to a lot of the joint meetings here, which kind of triggered her, and boom, last night we're into this massive argument that I was like, I think I spent all this time this weekend for nothing. And I was...
Sorry, I'm trying to shut it.
That's all right. I'll finish up. My resentments came flooding back against her, and I had to really pray this morning that, God, you've got me. Just please take this away from me, because I am married to a saint, and I realize that, and I'm just blessed to be an alcoholic, sexaholic. I could be a gambler. I could be a physical workout, because I got into marathons growing in the decades before this, and I just do things with too much passion, and I've got to back off in life sometimes, but thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Bobby.
Thanks, Bobby.
Thanks,
Bobby.
I'm Bryce. I'm a sexaholic.
Bryce.
First time I came into this program, it was, well, not the first time, but when I first came into the program in 2016, and I got my first sponsor, and he's talking to me out in the parking lot, and he said, "Bryce, don't leave until the miracle happens." And I'm like, boy, I need a miracle. I need a miracle so bad. And everywhere I went, there was like this dark cloud over me because I was messed up. I was about to lose a job and a career. And I was about to take my own life. I mean, that's where I was going. And no one would talk to me in the meetings. And I sure as hell was not going to go up to people to talk to and do fellowship. I ran when the meetings were over. I fled to my car and it zoomed on home, which didn't help. I felt horrible. And I was getting mad because no one wanted to talk to me because I wanted to be catered to, right? Like, very selfish sexaholic. And so I didn't know what to do. I didn't have the courage to say, like, I need people to talk to, and I didn't want to make phone calls. So I'm like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to a lot of meetings. And I'm just going to plant myself in the meetings. And I would just stand out there while everyone else is fellowshipping. And like, I'm just like so messed up. And eventually one of the guys came up to me and he said, "Hey, I guess you're going to stick around, huh?" I'm and I'm like, yeah, man, because I'm going to die otherwise. And that's when the clouds finally started to part and people started talking to me because I just kept showing up and they figured they might as well get to know me. So that was my very weird, crazy way of trying to enter the program. And, you know, if someone told me that there's this disease would be a blessing at that time, I'm sure someone did tell me, I'm like, yeah, this is a curse. This is one of those horrible curses. I wouldn't wish, actually, I know I thought this. I would not wish this on anyone, not on anyone. But my sponsor told me, keep coming back until the miracle happens. And the miracle happened, right? I was freed from the obsession and the compulsion of sexaholism, of lust and sexual acting out. Thank you. And I kept coming back. And one day I realized, like, this is a blessing. I've been, by being driven to God, to depend on God, has opened doors that never would have been opened for me to serve other people, be good for other people in ways I never wanted to. And so now I can say, like, no, this disease has been a blessing. And I don't need to have shame. Why have shame that I'm not masturbating, I'm not looking at pornography, you know, I'm not crossing all these other lines, I'm living a good life. Why do I need to feel shame of the things I'm not doing? So it's like, yeah, like I'm really grateful for this program. And one thing I wanted to point out, I'm very jealous. Like, for whatever reason, every time I come to the Unity Conference, I go to one of the sessions that's next door to the women's session, and there is so much laughter in that room. And I'm like, what's going on there? And so I feel like, you know, there's something special going on for the women in this program, especially here at the Unity Conference. And I always get a little jealous of that. Thanks for letting me share, Bryce Sexaholic.
Thanks, Bryce.
Matt Sexaholic.
Hi, Matt.
I've been thinking about the title of this ever since I saw it in the program, because it kind of reminds me of those, you know, when it says, well, we won't regret the past, or was to shut the door on it, and I just never understood that. It's like it was mentioned earlier, and I still don't quite, but I used to think, I deeply regret my past. I would love nothing more than to shut the door on it and never think about it again, have it just sort of vanish down the memory hole. But, you know, in the 3+ years I've been an SA, and I was, you know, I spent a number of years in a different fellowship, but I get more and more glimpses of what that means. You know, I don't embrace my sexaholism in the sense of like I'm hugging it because I like it. It's I accept it. I'm progressively accepting it. That's what I am. You know, there's some days where I think like I can just forget it or control it or not control it, control the lust or you know, I've got a handle on it because I'm doing X, Y, and Z. And I was, you know, I was been working on my third step and I was answering some questions from my sponsor and about, you know, what is surrender and what does surrender look like to you? And I have to kind of catch myself some of my answers because I know in my day-to-day life, I know if I do if I live my life a certain way, I know from experience that there won't be much lust in my life. It's just, if I set it up a certain way, I just doesn't enter my mind if I'm, and if I don't, if I, and I work, you know, I work for myself, so I can work at home, which is not a good place for me to be. So I try not to be there. But when I fool myself on a day, like, well, I can, you know, I can work from here for a few hours today because I got to, you know, wait for the gardener to come or whatever excuse I come up with, it's a struggle. And I guess where I'm getting back to is, I can fool myself into thinking, well, I'm setting my life up in the right way. It's really kind of me. And it's not. It's God telling me, you need to do this today. Because if you do this today, you'll be all right. And I'll be with you. If you just try to take back control yourself, you know, your boat's going to get swamped and you're going to sink. And, but I do, you know, sexaholism has ravaged my life. It is wrecked my marriage. My wife has put up with just a life, a whole years and years of dishonesty and broken promises. And sometimes I would, you know, tell myself, like, well, she knew I was a sexaholic when we got married. And but that doesn't justify things. I stopped the behaviors that involved other people before we got married, but during our marriage has been a lot of a lot of dishonesty, and so she's almost like had enough, and it's very scary to me. And but I guess I want to close with one thing that makes me realize what some of the truth of that title is. At a recent meeting, one of my home meetings, a guy came in who I knew from the outside world, and it was, at first I was like, oh God, and then I thought, but then it was actually a good thing, you know, because we were talking later. He's like, you know, Matt, if you hadn't been there, I don't know if I would have come back. Because I immediately reached out to him, and instead of just him being like, what is, you know, what's going on? My life's out of control, you know. And it was a God's way of letting me be of service and giving me a chance to live out some of the things we read, like, how can I help the man who's still sick? Which I always wondered, like, when am I going to get that chance? I'm not like, but that was, you know, God putting that opportunity in front of me. And he's still coming to meetings, and it helps me in my recovery. So thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
I'm Jeff. I'm a sexaholic.
Hey, Jeff.
This is Buddy.
Hi, Buddy.
I'm very blessed to have Buddy. Sit down. And thanks for the last share, Matt. It really prompted me to come up because my wife. Hey, sit down. My wife married me knowing that I have this problem, and I lean on that way too much. You know, it's like, hey, what the fuck did you expect? You know, you married me. You knew this. And I've been sober, technically sober, for the 3 years and 2 months, 4 months of our marriage. You know, so good for me, right? But still lie to her, still gaslight her, you know. So I've got a long way to grow. Long, long way to go. You know, I committed when we married, I will stop doing the bad things, but that'll make me a good person, right? Just the absence of evil does not make you good. And so I'm in that stage. She's had enough. She's, you know, still loves me, poor woman, still really loves me. And but she's had enough because she, you know, doesn't deserve to live with that. I know it's distressing. That's part of his thing. When I'm upset, he gets upset. So clearly, I'm upset. So anyway, that's my journey. I'm at the beginning part of it. I'm 64. It's a cautionary tale for you younger people. Do your steps. Do your work. Keep going to those meetings. Get past that awful part of just not doing the bad stuff and get into the good stuff that the elders in this church are modeling for us all so well. So thank you for having this place that we can come and see that recovery is possible. Yeah. Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff. Thanks, Jeff. Thank you, Jeff. Hey, buddy. Hey,
buddy. Hi, buddy. Hi, buddy. Hi, buddy. Hope you find your dad.
I think that guy has a towel.
Are those snacks for everyone?
They can be. Especially there's an extra one of these, especially I'm trying to pawn off.
I grabbed them, didn't have time to eat them.
Okay.
Sad times. I have time for a few more shares. Or double dips.
Can I double dip?
Yes, you can. Go for it.
I'm Dorothy, sexaholic.
Dorothy.
So, being a sexaholic and realizing that there's something wrong with me was hard enough, but then to be a unicorn, that was even more harder. And I say a unicorn because when in the entire state of Arizona, it's not as big as Texas, but still it's a huge state. And I'm the only one in any of the meetings from going from Flagstaff all the way down to Tucson. Like, what the heck? I even was thinking maybe I should go down one of those streets where ladies are walking around looking for someone to pay attention to them. Hey, you want to go to a meeting? I can't tell you what the meeting is, but when you get there, you'll figure it out. And so, but now, well, we had one lady come in, but she only came to one meeting. Then last Sunday, we had someone come in, and I think she's going to stay a while because her significant other is also SA, so there's more influence. I don't have to be the unicorn, the only one there, though I'm blessed in multiple ways having the mixed meetings because objectifying men and being the whole reason why I like went down that rabbit hole was if it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander, I might as well do it. You know, a negative to a negative in math is a positive, so what could go wrong? Well, a whole lot of the stuff goes wrong. So I needed the meetings, and I needed the meetings so bad that I was like, I'll just go to all the meetings. And luckily, no one was like, you shouldn't be there. Except one time I went into a meeting, I arrived early, and there was... four brothers came to the door, and they leaned in, saw that I was sitting there, and then they stood there, then they leaned in again. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, is this not a mixed meeting? Oh, yeah, it is. We just never seen a female show up. So thank you for all the brothers that accept ladies when we show up, because... it is hard sometimes, but, you know, we all need this, and thank you.
Thank you, Dorothy.
Time for one more share. Burning desires. I'll
double dip real quick. Something I forgot to share. John, sexaholic.
Hey, John.
You know, I kind of feel a little, I felt a little out of place when I first came to SA, too, only because most of my acting out was with other men. And I used to think, the other men just had, multiple affairs with women or, went to strip clubs. And I didn't do any of that. So I was going to adult bookstores and acting out with other men. So, or wherever I could meet them. And so I always felt out of place and thought I was the lowest of the low. But you know what? It's not true. I'm just another sexaholic. That was just my flavor. and it doesn't matter. But I was telling another sexaholic this morning on the way here that what I used to think was a liability is now an asset. Mm-hmm. Now I get to help those people who struggle in that area and say, whatever you're thinking of doing, don't do it because I've already done it. And it doesn't work. Yeah, take it from me. I tell him my story, tell him what happened and how I acted out. And even the guy I was with for a little while trying to do this program and in church, it didn't work. And I said, don't do it. It's not going to work. You're just going to be you have enough program in you. You'll have enough church, Jesus or whatever, faith in you to make you miserable. And it was the whole time. It's not till I really started working the program again and doing what I was supposed to be doing in the first place is when I got better. And now I just feel so good about helping other people and just saying, here's where I was that, and now I'm right here. Because even that obsession that part of my addiction is kind of mostly lifted. And I'm grateful to God. Only God can do for me what I can't do for myself. So thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, John.
Any burning desires? Burning desire.
Anybody else? Going once? Going twice? Sold. That is all the time we have for sharing. If you did not get a chance to share, please find someone after the meeting to talk with. This is an anonymous program. Please keep all names and shares you have heard in this meeting to yourselves. Our experience teaches us that attending meetings, working the steps, and giving and receiving sponsorship are key elements to maintaining our own sobriety. Would anyone willing to sponsor or temporary sponsor please raise your hand? Awesome. Thank you. So please note ID badges with a blue dot. Those also indicate those who are willing to sponsor or temporary sponsors. Thank you for your service for those who are available for that, and please reach out to them as needed. This is an anonymous program. Please keep the name, email address, and phone number of anyone you meet or learn about in SA to yourself. What we say here, let it stay here.
Here.
So I am going to ask a volunteer to read the closing reading, which is from page 153 of the AA Big Book. So maybe somebody in the front. Thank you, Paula. Go for it. So yeah, starting halfway down the page and on the back.
This is empty, yes.
Awesome. Thank you. Awesome. Go for it. Thanks, Paula.
Embracing my sexaholism. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcohol.
Closing reading is vision for you or the 12 promises.
Oh.
Yeah. You're not the only one.
Well,
sorry.
Would you like to read the vision for you? That makes sense now. I was like, we're never going to read these. Okay, good.
A vision for you.
Thank you, Paul.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Awesome. Thanks, Paula. Yeah, that reading from 153 of the Big Book, though, definitely worth a read at some point. So, but let's circle up to close. You should just read the whole Big Book. And we're going to close with the third step prayer after a moment of silence.
Especially for the sexaholic who still suffers. So let's take a moment of silence. Step prayer. God,
I offer myself to thee, to build with me, to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away. I would help, thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Keep coming back. It works if you work it, so work it because you're worth it.